Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Boycott Busyness and Find More Meaning. We are pleased today to bring you conference speaker Courtney Carver. Courtney is the author of Soulful Simplicity, How Living with Less Can Lead to So Much More. She's also the creator of Minimalist Fashion Challenge, Project 333, and blogs at bemorewithless.com. Courtney, welcome.
Thank you so much. Welcome, everyone, and I so appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me today. I'm really looking forward to sharing some practical tips with you that are going to help you trade your busyness for presence and priority. This will involve some slowing and paring down, and you may be surprised that even though it will feel like you are doing less, you'll be doing better work and finding more joy in how you spend your time and attention. And maybe that's the most important part of all of this. I know this can be a challenge, but cultivating the ability to stay in the here and now changes everything. It changes everything, not just about your work, but about your relationships and your health and your entire life. Before we jump in, I want to tell you why I decided to simplify my life and become less busy and more present. And I want to tell you why, because the why is what gives me or gave me the sticking power, my change, the sticking power. I used to really get caught up in the how of things. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get started. But the how is something that you can always figure out. Really understand your why and the how will come. Up until 2006, I always thought I would be overextended in every area of my life. I don't know if you can relate, but I never felt like I had enough money, time, attention, or joy. And I thought that's just the way it was supposed to be. No one around me, especially in the workplace, seemed to have enough of those resources either. I kept going anyway and seemed to always be feeling run down and burnt out, overwhelmed, under-inspired. So I know I was never bringing my best to the office or to my family or to any of my passions. I often wondered if this is what being an adult was all about, but I was never quite motivated enough to figure out the answer. Not to mention, I was too busy to figure it out. Simplicity author Elaine St. James says, one of the reasons we keep our lives so complicated is so we won't have to listen to our inner voice telling us what we need to do to make our lives work better. I could relate. Everything changed in 2006 when I got a wake-up call I could not ignore. After months of debilitating vertigo and fatigue, tingling in my hands, numbness in my face, multiple doctor visits, and lots of neurological testing, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. All the research I did showed me that I could not keep treating myself the way I was, and that I was moving at an unsustainable pace. All the more didn't resonate with my heart and literally broke my body. My lifestyle may not have been the cause of my MS, but it definitely contributed to relapses and symptoms. When I learned the impact that stress had on MS, other autoimmune conditions, and most disease and illness, I decided to eliminate as much stress as I could from my life with the goal of living well with MS. Little did I know, through simplicity, I wouldn't just feel healthier, but I would change my whole life. You may be wondering, how do I become less busy and still thrive in my life and career? Here's the answer. Create time and space to remember who you are and learn how to trust yourself. Once that happens, and it does take some time, but once that happens, you can say no without apology. You can live and work in a way that supports your mental and physical health without justifying your actions or explaining yourself, and you can get your most meaningful work done. So here are a few things I did very specifically to eliminate stress, simplify my life, and learn how to trust myself again. I hope these recommendations will help you close the gap between inspiration and action. I think on most days, we are over-inspired. Between our social feeds, inspirational stories, great business ideas, and everything else that pops up on a daily basis, there is just so much to process and aspire to. The trick is to close the gap. When you feel inspired, take even the smallest action. I'm going to share some big ideas with you and then some micro actions so you don't have to wait if you feel inspired to implement any of these. In fact, right after the call, you can put something into action immediately. So let's jump in. Number one, create a morning routine. How do you spend your mornings? Chances are you already have a routine by default. Perhaps it's wake up, snooze button, brush teeth, coffee, shower, breakfast in the car, late to work. Maybe it's more intentional than that. My morning routine used to look something like that. Snooze button, snooze button, snooze button. Oh no, I'm running late. Coffee, shower, kid in the car, start the day half asleep, running late and frantic. It was less of a routine actually and more of a bad habit. Once I started taking yoga classes, I wanted to experience what I felt when I left class, even on the days I didn't have a yoga class. So I started a tiny practice of my own each morning. It was about 5 minutes of yoga. And I know that that doesn't sound like a lot, but even that small amount of getting on my yoga mat gave me a little boost. My morning routine started when I decided to trade one of my snoozes for 5 minutes alone on my yoga mat, practicing what I had learned in class. It was all I had time for at first. Those 5 minutes made such a difference in how I approached my day, so I decided to add another 5 minutes. Next, instead of extending my yoga practice past 10 minutes, I added 5 minutes of writing. And then the following week, I added 5 minutes of meditation. After a few weeks, I traded all of my extra snooze buttons for a 30-minute practice of writing, yoga, and meditation each morning. That became my meaningful morning routine. Because after I added those activities, I started adding minutes onto each, 1 minute a week to each activity. That sounds painfully slow, but that's what made it work. The rest of my day back then was still pretty chaotic, but those 30 minutes in the morning helped me handle the chaos a little better and navigate an otherwise busy, crazy day. My morning routine became a place I could revisit during the day instead of overreacting or getting carried away with that busyness or anxious about everything I had on my plate. I had more energy, more intention, and more presence. Not only that, but I started looking forward to those 30 minutes each morning. Before I checked email, made my daughter breakfast, or had anyone to answer for, I fed myself first. If you'd like to create a meaningful morning routine, I recommend using habit stacking. Build your routine slowly, habit by habit, and minute by minute. You probably already practice habit stacking without even knowing it. If you wake up, take a shower, use shampoo, then conditioner, dry off and get dressed, you're a stacker. Perhaps you stack in the evening by brushing your teeth, washing your face, and reading a book before bed. You can probably identify little pockets of habit stacks throughout your day. While I strongly believe in the power of building habits one at a time, habit stacking gives you the momentum to build multiple habits simultaneously. Each habit triggers and supports the one to follow. So here's your micro action, your small step when creating a morning routine. Commit to 5 minutes tomorrow. I know you might be traveling or have a meeting or another obligation, but still commit to 5 minutes. 5 minutes in the morning to write, to read, to drink a cup of tea, to sit on your yoga mat, whatever it is that you want to do, but 5 minutes that you're dedicating to the start of your morning routine. Number two, give your closet a make-under. How many decisions a day do you make that are fashion-based? When mornings are consumed with choosing outfits, weekends at the mall looking for deals, we become a slave to fashion, even when we don't really care about fashion. Create a capsule wardrobe and choose from a very small selection seasonally. I recommend 33 items or less, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. For this closet make-under, you don't have to buy anything new or get rid of anything either. The only difference at first will be a pared-down closet and a lighter heart. Start with less and create some space in your closet and your morning. You will also reduce decision fatigue, which will leave you a little bit sharper throughout the rest of the day. Here's what I recommend you remove from your closet for this make-under. So remove the stuff, the clothing, accessories, and shoes from your closet that don't fit your body right now. Not that they may not fit your body in 2 years or 2 years ago, but right now, if they don't fit your body, remove them. If they don't feel good on your skin or support the way you like to live, remove them. We deserve to wear clothes that fit our bodies and lifestyles. Remove the items that are not a good fit for you. Remove the stuff from your closet that still have price tags attached. There is a reason you haven't worn that yet. I used to buy things because they were a great price and hang them in my closet like some sort of trophy, as if I deserved a pat on the back for buying something for the cheapest possible price, even if I didn't like it. Remove the stuff from your closet that someone else bought for you, especially, I guess, or only if you don't wear it or don't appreciate it. I recommend that as adults, we stop gifting each other clothing. Deciding what to wear is a personal decision. If you're holding on to something because someone else gave it to you, even though you never wear it, give yourself a break. Your relationship with the gift isn't as important as your relationship with the person who gave it to you. Focus more on people and less on stuff. Remove the stuff from your closet that you think you should wear, that you should wear. Just because you read about it in a fashion magazine doesn't make it right for you. Even if a stylist told you to wear red or a special quiz suggested more patterns, it doesn't make it right for you. Only you know what's right for you. Next, for your closet make-under, remove the stuff, the clothes that are worn out. If they're worn out, torn, stained, and beyond repair, you probably aren't wearing them anywhere. Anyway, I recommend also removing the stuff that you haven't worn in over a year. Remove the things in your closet that make you sad. We don't think about this that much, but if there are clothes in your closet that make you feel sad because you spent too much on them, they don't fit you, or they remind you of something or someone who made you sad, remove them. You don't have to look at those clothes every day. You may not even notice how they're making you feel, the clothes in your closet, but once they're gone, I think you'll notice a lightness that wasn't there before. Once you remove all of these items, as I mentioned, you don't have to get rid of them, but instead box them up. Get them out of sight. Don't label the boxes, but instead see what happens after a few months. If you don't miss or even remember what's inside the boxes, donate them. If after a little time you notice that your closet make-under is contributing to easier mornings, less decision fatigue, and other benefits, consider joining my Minimalist Fashion Challenge, Project 333. You can Google it or visit my website for all the details, but in a nutshell, it's a challenge where you commit to wearing 33 items of clothes, accessories, jewelry, and shoes in total for 3 months. Tens of thousands of people from around the world have tried it and learned so much about themselves and what they want and need in their closet and their life in the process. So here's your micro action. Write down 5 to 10 items in your closet that you never use. You can probably think of them without even looking in your closet. Jot them down, and when you get home or to your closet, donate them. Number 3, unplug. We are so attached to our devices and the internet. Now, there are many advantages to that, like we get to hang out today, but filling every available moment with a Wi-Fi connection is not working. I recommend unplugging for periods of time every day and longer each week. Have fun with it. In fact, pretend the internet is broken. The internet has endless options and choices that trick us into believing that a workable solution is only a click away, and then another and another. The problem is we don't get to discover solutions that come from being bored, lost, lonely, and many other things because we're so busy with the internet. Creativity and clarity is squashed with too many answers and choices. Too much choosing is a problem. So decide for yourself or even involve your family and tell them that the internet is broken on Sundays or whatever day works for you and take a digital break. So your micro action for unplugging is to schedule a digital sabbatical. Put it on your calendar today. If you can make a full 24 hours, I highly recommend it. If not, block off a large section of time over the weekend or every weeknight or something like that, but get it on your calendar. Next up, surround yourself with like-minded people. If you are making changes in your life, build a support system. If you don't have that at home or in your day-to-day life, build it with books, blogs, TED Talks, podcasts, any information that fuels your desire to change. Build that support system. Don't focus on getting people on board or changing your friends and family. You know how it feels when someone wants you to change. It doesn't work. Instead of convincing others to change, stay focused on you. If you're trying to live more simply and reduce busyness and you want the whole family to join in, show them. If you want them to see the joy of living with less, live joyfully with less. So here's your micro action. Identify one blog or podcast that will support your new direction. And then start visiting it or listening to it on a regular basis. Next one, declutter, physically, mentally, digitally. Clutter attracts clutter and calm attracts calm. Think about how you feel when you walk into the office and your desk is a mess. Your inbox is exploding and colleagues are waiting nearby with a quick question. It's stressful. You can experience the same thing at home, too, when you walk in the door and things are a mess. It doesn't feel calm. It feels overwhelming. So eliminate what doesn't matter. If you want to know what really matters to you, eliminate everything that doesn't. Simplifying things creates an environment that requires fewer choices and more energy and focus to make decisions that we need to make. Look at each area of your life one at a time and get rid of the stuff you don't care about. Creating a lifestyle with fewer options and less distraction invites you to go deeper versus wider and will dramatically improve your relationships, your health, and your work. As a micro action for decluttering, put a box by your front door, empty box, and whenever you come and go, if you have something in your hand or you notice something on the way that you really don't care about or doesn't add value to your life, put it in the box. And when the box is full, escort it out the door and donate it. Last but not least, take one small step. People often ask me where to start when simplifying their lives and reducing busyness, and you might be curious too. If you want to simplify your life, if you want to get rid of the busyness in your day for more health, happiness, and presence, it doesn't matter where you start. There will be hundreds of small steps, and they all matter. Start in your closet, your inbox, your headspace, your heart, anywhere. Take one small step and let that motivate the next step. Experiment, be curious, listen to your heart, and learn to trust yourself again. Remember, you know you better than anyone else. So do whatever it takes to create an environment where you have a little time each day to sit quietly and trust your heart. Clear the clutter, busyness, stress, and everything that doesn't matter so you have time and attention for what does. Thank you.
All right. That was great. Thank you. Now, as I'm sure you can imagine, we have lots of listeners who are interested in simplifying their busy lives. So I've got a couple of questions for you. Now, first off, behind a lot of women's busy behavior is the drive to please. We want to be delivering at work, pleasing our partners at home, and giving family and friends the time and attention they deserve. What would you say to someone who feels guilty for saying no to these sort of critically important people in her life?
Such a good question, and that's something that I used to struggle with a lot until I realized that in the process of trying to please everyone, I was completely compromising not only my own health, but the very things I said were important to me, like my relationships, like the quality of my work. At some point, all this yesing leads to total breakdown. And so all the things we have good intentions to do, we end up falling short on and then feeling bad about ourselves. And then it's this complete vicious circle of, you know, then trying to make up for it by saying yes even more. And then we go through the whole breakdown cycle again. So I think we have to step back and realize that by serving ourselves first, by creating some really solid, healthy habits, by creating less distraction, and by saying no to the things that don't matter, to the things that we know are depleting us, we can really give in a way that we want to the things that matter most, whether that be within our families and our jobs. So while our instinct is to look for the tips and tricks that reduce the busyness at work on a day-to-day basis, we have to look at the bigger picture. We have to start with ourselves. That's how we're going to make the biggest change.
Okay. Now, like many addictions, chronic busyness can serve as an escape sometimes. And when we cut the busyness out, it can feel uncomfortable. How do you recommend getting past that discomfort?
It's not easy. We definitely use busyness and other things as a way to remove ourselves from our lives. And other reasons. I mean, I used to think my busyness meant that I was important and needed. I felt some validation as a result, but it ended up being this escape. You know, no, I can't pay attention to all these things that are going wrong in my life. I'm too busy for that. So with that, with the clutter, even when you're removing clutter from your home and there are empty countertops and shelves, that's a visual representation of that discomfort. With the busyness that sits on our calendars and even inside us. And my recommendation is to sit with it, be okay with it not feeling okay for a little while. I tend to write out things when I'm uncomfortable, so I don't try to fill up the space again for the wrong reasons. Being busy doesn't mean doing nothing, so there's still going to be plenty on your plate. But if you notice that discomfort, or if you see someone else around you scrambling as you are pulling back and you feel threatened by that, write about it. Put it on paper. No one ever has to see it, but by getting it off your brain and onto paper, you can see the words for what they really are and assess if this is really a problem right now or just working through some discomfort, which is okay. It's great practice for other discomfort you might face in life.
Sounds like we've got some homework tonight, ladies. Now, can something like a busy boycott be applied to prioritizing your tasks at work? I mean, we're all overwhelmed with 100 different people who all think that their priority is the number one priority. How can we kind of bring some focus and simplicity to that effort?
Absolutely. I think reducing busyness and even boycotting busyness, which I have a special challenge for that, will help prioritize. But even bigger than that, it will help us remove some of the things that aren't at the top of the priority list. I mean, so often we want all the things to be a priority, but when everything is important, nothing is. Nothing gets our attention that it deserves when we try to give it to everything. So yes, I think that you learn to better identify what your priority is and to let go of the things that are lower on the list versus trying to squeeze them all in.
And can people learn more about that challenge at bemorewithless.com, or is there a different URL they can go to?
Yes, if they go to bemorewithless.com, and I believe if you scroll to the bottom of the page or subscribe, you can receive the Busy Boycott Challenge via email. And if you can't find it, feel free to reach out to me via email, Courtney@bemorewithless.com, and I'll send a link over.
Great. Thank you. So Marisol, one of our listeners, wrote in with this question. I am a young professional in higher ed with quite a few roles. From what I've observed, the busier you are or seem, the more people respect your work ethic. Can you please give me some advice about how young professionals can boycott busyness without hurting their possible opportunities?
Sure. Such a powerful question. I think we often believe that, and we lose ourselves in the process by trying to be the person that we think others want us to be. So we completely lose who we are, and that's where when we forget to trust ourselves and forget how to trust ourselves. So I recommend, first and foremost, starting with you. As a young professional, this is the perfect time to really dig into a morning routine and to some daily, very consistent habits that make you feel very confident in what you have to offer and what direction you want to go. I mean, so often we don't take the time to ask that question first. Instead, we say, well, what are the opportunities? But perhaps decide what you want first and then find the opportunities that match that. If you go through that process, you'll care a little bit less about what other people think. If you define success for yourself, you won't have to worry about that people-pleasing that comes with all of this, and that, you know, making sure people respect you because you look like you're busy. Instead, really think about creating something for your work and your life that matters to you, and then other people can't help but want to support that.
Great. And we have time for just one last small question from Suzanne, which is, how can you manage micro tasks as they blip into your mind without derailing what you're currently focusing on? For example, oh, I need to add that to the shopping list. I need to make this phone call. I need to buy a birthday gift.
Yeah, we're all going to have those things pop up during the day. I mean, it's easy enough just to jot them down. But I think, again, this comes back to the bigger picture. Have a great morning routine. Start a meditation or mindfulness practice. It's going to help you calm that mind during the day so that perhaps in the morning you can make a nice list for the day or at the end of the day, and there'll be less of that stuff jumping out. But if that is the reality right now, keep a small notebook and just jot it down and let it go. Jot it down, let it go, and let that be the practice for now.
It's a great mantra. Jot it down, let it go. Great. Well, so that is all we can squeeze into 30 minutes. So we'll have to end there. This teleclass will be posted to the conference websites as a podcast. So if you want to listen again or share with a friend, keep an eye out for an email from Eventbrite letting you know when that's ready. Courtney Carver, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. And just quickly, I'll mention that the Busy Boycott that we mentioned can be found both on the website, bemorewithless.com, and in my book, Soulful Simplicity.